everybody! Welcome to the Transpose Podcast. I am the fabulous and incredible Robin Allura. With me, as usual, is the equally fabulous and wonderful Miss Stephanie Bree. Stephanie, how are you?
Hey, everybody. Well, I'm freezing my toes off, but I found my winter boots, so I'll be all right.
That's right. This is being recorded during the Texas snowpocalypse. Now, Stephanie, this is a landmark episode.
Yes.
Very big episode. Our listeners may not know this, but the past four episodes, Stephanie and I have not been in the same room. I know. Shocker. Hold for gasps.
Well, okay, sure, why not? That was my squirt bottle opening. That wasn't me gasping for air.
Sound effects not included, everyone. Anyway, this is the fifth episode, and you know what? Being episode number five, it's not going to be as good as Empire Strikes Back, but I promise we will be better than Star Trek V. So, Stephanie, what are we talking about today?
I don't make promises I can't keep, so... well, I think one of the big thing we're talking about today is, and this is one of the reasons why this is a special episode, and so we're sharing our coming out stories, and not with just y'all, but with each other as well, because this is, it's a personal thing in a person's life. Very private. And yeah. I've got... Mine comes in layers.
Yeah, imagine that. We haven't shared this with each other. Who would have guessed? It's almost like we threw this podcast together at the last minute. Anybody believe that? No, we planned it. Not really. There's a lot of people calling bullshit on me right now. Anyway!
As a former television producer, I can tell you that we bullshit our way through a lot of the news.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we're all fake news. It just means sometimes we got to throw a show together without any time to prepare.
And anybody who listens to this podcast that just actually knows me and spent any amount of time with me knows I'm full of shit anyway. So this is right up our alley. All right. So let's jump in. Let's jump right on in here and get to the, I don't want to call it a heavy topic because it's not heavy. It's kind of a...
No, but it's meaty.
It's meaty.
And we like meaty.
Oh, Lord, she snowballed it in there just like that. Oh.
I have to
Oh, meet. God. So hard to behave around this one. Anyway. Oh. All right. So, why don't we do this? Our coming out stories are going to be vastly different. They really are. You know, this is a great place to start this episode. This is the most important and the scariest moment in any transgender individual's lives. Now, it's also a very scary thing for our LGBTQ community friends. But, you know, we're a couple of trans women here talking about trans issues. So I think we need to focus on the trans part. I don't know about you, Steph. I will also get out there and say this, that we hope these stories help. If you're listening and you know someone who's going through this, you're going through this yourself, whatever it is, really hope that us sharing these monumental little moments in our lives really kind of helps give courage and strength to people who are still hiding their true selves. And I will say also that no two people's coming out stories are ever the same. And you're going to find that out just by listening to us. So I think... Let's start off with Stephanie. Why don't you tell us your coming out story?
Well, before I go digging into mine, because this is going to take a good chunk of the show, I imagine, I wanted to point out that I have a friend who, I'm not going to give you any indication who they are, but they're young. This is a young person whose sexuality is on the spectrum. They're LGBT. And they basically told me they didn't have to come out. They're just sort of evolved. And because they are a young person, I think that's progress towards the direction we were talking about previously. Because they just sort of, just, you know, they're figuring things out and people are just going with it. And they didn't have that breakout moment is? Because I asked, because there was a, I think it was like National Coming Out Day or something like that a few months ago. And I asked all my friends, you know, what was your story? And I was surprised to learn that not everybody had a story.
No, that's very true. Not everybody does have a story. At least not a big, long story. So
grab your popcorn and make sure that you are around the fire and you're ready, because this is going to take a minute. But it starts, my story initially starts in, I want to say 2003, but it may have been 2002. Don't quote me on either of those dates. But I was living it with my parents, and I was busted. And my sister walked into my room, and I was wearing some of her clothes. And so I had to come up with a story on the fly of why I was, because she was like literally taken back. Now, this was not my actual coming out, but this was the groundwork that would get me there, because I had to tell her, at first I told her I was really into girls, but also like I like to dress like girls because, you know, boys like to experiment and dress up, blah, 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 blah. But after we got an apartment together, her and I, a couple years later, her and me and my sister and one of her friends, so we all three lived together, kind of like that sitcom from the 70s, Three's Company. It was kind of sort of like that. Don't read too much into it, though. But she saw things that punched some holes in my story I had told her. And so she just point blank confronted me one day. She's like, did you lie to me then or are you lying to me now? And I said, Becky. This is my sister. I said, Becky, here's the truth. I'm not ready to tell you the truth. I'm just not. All you need to know is sometimes when no one's around, I dress like a girl. And she's like, okay, that's all I need to know. And so we didn't talk further about it, well, pretty much ever, because this was close to our falling out, which I'm not going to get into. Later that year, I moved in with my other sister. And a situation that I can't talk about ended up getting me into a conversation with her husband about some stuff that he found on my computer. And then we had to do some, you know, I had to do some explaining. And then I basically, he shared something with me from his life that was very personal. And it was the kind of thing that made me comfortable enough to tell him the truth this far, but not all the way. So I told him that I do dress like a girl sometimes. And sometimes I, you know, dress up, take pictures, blah, blah, blah. And that helped put his mind at ease, because he was a little concerned, because he's very evangelical, and he was very concerned. He was more concerned with me becoming a Catholic than he was me becoming trans, but that's a whole nother topic.
You know those Catholics that can't trust them.
That's right. So that was the what I call the initial groundwork phases, and it took me several. And this was when I was really in my aggressive years, when I was trying to keep people from finding out, because I was terrified, rightfully so, as I'm learning, that my family wouldn't be very receptive. And so I had a really close family. Me and my sisters were really close. My parents and I were really close. So I got used to that. And I assumed that if I ever did come out, they would, you know, accept me. That was a false assumption, to be fair. They have not been that warm. That's not to say some of them aren't trying, but that's neither here nor there. So then, in 2000, we're going to skip ahead to 2017, and this is where it gets a little tricky. So 2017, I was living in an apartment in Whitesboro, Texas, by myself. First time in my life, I'm living in my own place, paying the rent with my own paycheck. Very first time ever. Now, I have lived in apartments in the past, but I always had a roommate, or I had somebody helping me pay the rent. So this is the first time I was totally on my own. I was working at this newspaper. My official title was staff writer. And we had two other individuals in the newspaper. We had a girl whose name was Delaney. She was our sales rep. And then we had the editor/publisher. His name was Austin. And Austin has four kids and a wife. And he just needed to move on. He couldn't continue to make a living on the salary that this small town, Nowheresville community newspaper was willing to pay him. So he left for greener pastures. I got thrust literally overnight into a position I wasn't quite ready for. Now, professionally, I was ready to be the news editor, but personally, that's a big responsibility. So I could handle the workload, but there was a lot to do. So when he left, it was just me and Delaney. Now, we had a third guy, but he was basically sort of, like you would say, a freelancer. But he was also, I mean, he was staff, but he worked for our other publications. So he did his thing and I did my thing. So he basically handled sports and I handled everything else on the news side. And then I did all the production. So Delaney and I spent a lot of long nights together in the office. And we got really close to each other. And what happened was feelings developed more so on my end than on her end. She had just broken up with her fiance, the guy that she'd been living with for 10 years. And so things got a little weird. And I started slowly confiding in her little by little, you know. And one day, I just told her, I wrote her an email. I still have a copy of it. Maybe I'll read it one of these days. I don't know. But I wrote her an email, and I just explained to her how the reason why I was so, you know, defensive and so private and everything was because I was considering that I may have been a trans woman who was trapped in a guy's body and in a man's world, and I didn't know what to do with that. And I explained that to her, and 2 days go by. She doesn't respond to my email. So I'm, like, terrified I just lost her. Now she's going to quit her job and go find somewhere else to work, and then I'm doing all three jobs. Well, things happen that I can't really get into because of reasons, but the editor who left, he ended up coming back. Now, he didn't come back entirely for the paycheck. Like I said, that was why he left, but he found a supplemental income, so he was able to come back, and he was able to take that position back on, which basically, if you will, saw me demoted to back to staff writer. And so I was in a weird place. And Delaney told me, she just walked up to me afterwards. And she just walked up to me, you know, as a friend. And she said, hey, let's go get lunch. And I said, okay, let's go get lunch. This is the first time she ever agreed to get lunch with me. And we're sitting there and we're eating lunch. And then she just opened up. She's like, I read your email. And I just want, you know, you can trust me and everything. And then her side job, because, you know, newspapers don't pay shit, by the way. That's just the truth of it. Her side job was she worked at a clothing boutique on the weekends. So she invited me to come out there and hang out with her one of these days. And she just showed me a lot of things to do with fashion and clothes and women's clothes and everything. That was the first person I told. But then I immediately went into hiding again. I jumped right into the Catholic Church because it was my way. Well, there's a lot of reasons for why I wanted the Catholic Church, because I was raised Baptist, but it was my way of overcompensating. I needed some kind of religious structure that was going to basically purge me of what I was going through. That's what my plan was. That didn't work for me. Well, after about a month of just waffling back and forth, I decided I had enough. I couldn't take it anymore. I needed to get out of there. So I quit my job. I gave them notice and I left and I packed up my car and I abandoned my apartment. I just shoved everything in my car that I could fit in my car and left everything behind. And I drove to Nevada. That's where my family's from. My parents live in Nevada. And I got to Nevada and I stayed with my parents that summer. And then I ended up telling my older sister. That was the first time I told a family member. And she was at first, she was like, well, that's really cool. And I'm really proud of you and I'm really happy for you. And I was like, well, slow things down a little bit because I'm not like telling anybody yet. And she's like, well, I'm going to tell mom that she's just going to have to deal with it. And I said, no, let me be the one to tell mom. And then we went back and forth on that. And then she's like, okay. So at this point, I had accepted. I had already talked to a gender therapist. They had already diagnosed me with gender dysphoria. And I had accepted I was trans. Up to this point, I waffled a lot because I still thought I was just a crossdresser, or I was just a closeted homosexual, which I was confused because I was like, but I like girls. And then other things came up. So I was like, well, do I? And then I waffled on that. What kept me from going forward for the longest time was trying to settle, because I'm coming at this from a Christian perspective. I'm coming at it from the binary. You have to have, if you're a man, you have to be into women. If you're a woman, you have to be into men. And I was like, okay, I was trying to get that out of my head first. And since it took me a while to get through that, I was like, okay, I just need to clear my head. So I called one of my friends who I knew was bisexual, who had had a bisexual relationship with somebody I knew and was really close to. And so I called her and I talked to her. And then she asked me a bunch of questions that I didn't have. I hadn't considered, and basically, after we had a good talk, her advice was, don't do anything, just keep living your life, be you. You got to figure things out, but go to a Pride event, and when you get there, you'll know. That's what she told me. She said, you'll know. It'll open up, and if it's not there, you'll leave, and you'll know. And so that's what I did, but it took me 2 years to get there. This was 2017 and then 2018. So 2019, I went to Pride. Okay? So June 2019, I went to Pride, and it just opened. It just, everything came flooding out. I started telling everybody at Pride. At this time, I was working at the daily newspaper in a bigger city in the same market. So I was becoming well-known, and people knew who I was. And I was starting to figure out who was LGBT. I was discovering who was gay, who was lesbian through my interactions. Because when you're interviewing people as a news reporter, you get information about people. And so I'd done a story on a guy who was gay. I'm not going to say who it was. And I asked, because one of the standard questions when you're doing a profile on somebody is, one of the standard questions is, tell me about your family. And he danced around the subject. And I knew that was a point that I knew not to include in the story, because, hey, if he's dancing around it, this is not important. It's no longer relevant to the story. The newspaper publisher called me into his office and told me, first of all, this is when the publisher confided in me his situation, and then told me, there are a lot of people like us in the community that don't want people to know they're like us. And he told me that that person that I interviewed was one such. And so this was when I started to realize that, you, first of all, you don't out somebody else. That is something you never do. So I know, knowing what I know a lot of people in the community who are, but they are not known, and I'm not going to be the one to say who. But I can tell you there's more of us than you think there are. We probably have bigger numbers than people realize. So then I went to the Pride, and so I started seeing other people in the community that I had, in through my interactions, learned, and because they were there, some of them celebrating. And so I was talking to these people, and they were like, because they knew I worked for the newspaper, so I wasn't there to cover the event, because we weren't covering the event, and I'm not going to go into the whole bullshit behind that, because none of the media outlets wanted to cover the event. Because it wasn't news. Even though it was the first Pride in the county, but it wasn't news because it was a Pride event. You know, nobody wants that in this very redneck county. So I started, you know, I'm like, I'm not here for the newspaper, I'm just here to meet people. And then finally I told one of the girls who was a lesbian, and I was like, well, actually, and I got real quiet, and I was like, I'm here to meet people, but I'm not out yet. And she's like, oh, I gotcha. And so that was sort of my way of telling her. Now, she was a big-time person in the community. She was well-known. She was well-connected. And she worked for one of the, I'm not going to say who she worked for, but she worked for one of the big employers in the area. And so that was my first time saying the words to somebody that wasn't family, or when I wrote that letter to Delaney. And then I went home, and I sort of broke through that whole, okay, now I know I'm trans. So then I slowly started telling people at work. I started confiding in the girls first. I confided in some of my female coworkers. And then the first guys that I started to tell were guys that I knew who were gay. So I was like, okay, I can trust them. So I started telling my gay friends about Stephanie. And they were on board right off the bat. Then I started going to this place. I'm not going to say where, but I started going to a social event where I started meeting people. And I met my first non-binary individual. And they changed my whole perspective. And there were people there. This was the coolest thing. It was like this social event where everybody had name tags, and this is the first time I've seen people with their pronouns on their name tags. And there was one other trans person there. And so I gravitated to this person, and we talked a lot. And we became pretty close for a little bit. Now, I had to keep my distance because I'm over 35 and this person is a teenager. So I had to keep things, you know, professional, if you will, you know, but we kept, you know, the thing was at a church, so I can say that much. But anyways, then I slowly started opening up to the people in that group. So at this point, 2 years into it, I have told basically everybody around me except for my family. And so The way I told my mom was that it was June 2020. This was last June. The way I told my mom was I called her up and I started talking to her and we were having this conversation and she knew about my cosplaying. And one of the characters I cosplay in my YouTube videos is the Retro Witch. This is where I put on a witch's outfit, long hair, and I talk about horror movies. Now, I had told my parents that this was just a thing that I did because my website's The Spider's Lair. My podcast at that time was called The Dark Web Podcast. And so I did a lot of theatrics. And I was a theater minor in college. So my parents expected that. They knew what I was into. Mom was all, well, I don't care that you dress like a girl. That doesn't bother me because we know that you've kind of dabbled in that in the past. Because my parents had caught me cross-dressing a couple of times. But she said, what bothers me is you're dressing up like a witch. So I had to have that conversation. And in my attempt to comfort her, I said, Mom, I have to tell you the truth. And she's like, what? And I said, I have started taking HRT. And she's like, what is that? And so I told her what it was. And she said, okay. And I said, I am transitioning. At work, when I go to work, they call me Stephanie. And that was when I told her. I said, that is the actual truth. I am now transitioning to become a woman. She told me that's fine. She said, I don't have an answer for that. And I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. I'm just going to tell you I have a sister that's lesbian. And, you know, I don't understand it. And I can't relate to what you're going through. But we're going to love you no matter what. Blah, blah, blah. And then she said, but please don't tell your dad. Let me lay the groundwork. And then I'll fill him out. Well, she texted me later that day. She's like, yeah, he knows. You need to call him right now. So I called my dad, and he immediately started talking about, yeah, this COVID-19's sucking up the NBA, isn't it? And then we just talked about basketball for 45 minutes, because that's all we ever talked about. He completely dodged everything. He didn't want to acknowledge that it was real. 3 months into my transitioning, calling Mom every day, or not every day, but every day I would call my mom, talking to her. And finally, he called me one day, and he said, you broke your mom's heart. And he started to guilt me. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, all this, you know, queer stuff, it's just breaking her heart. She's not on board with it. You just need to leave us alone. You need to stop calling us and let your mom process. So at this point, I thought my parents were cutting me out of their life. And I was devastated because I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I told my middle sister. I told her. She's the one whose land I was living on. And I told her, I'm not sure if you... I started asking questions. I said, I'm not sure what you think, but I wanted to ask her... I asked her if it would be possible if I could buy the land, and she said no. And then I asked her if I could get a lease, and she said no. And then she said, why? We're family. We're good. And I said, well, what if you had somebody in your family who was gay? And she's like, well, then they'd have to... Then they wouldn't be in my family anymore. And I said, what if you had somebody in your family who was trans? And she said, well, I'm pretty sure you're talking about you. And I said, yes. And then we had a big old argument about trans and why she thought it was, you know, sinful and everything. I have not had a conversation with her since that day. So all I'm going to say there is I have not had a warm welcome with the rest of her family, her in-laws, I shall say. And for the time being, I'm going to say that we are basically keeping our distance. That's where I am right now. Things could have been worse. I will be straight up. They could have been worse. I'm kind of relieved in some ways that all that happened is we are no longer speaking. But it is heartbreaking to have all of my family basically tell me they don't want nothing to do with me. Then my older sister, who was the first one I confided in, told me, I know I'm supportive and I said that I'm on your side, but I'm really brokenhearted that I'm losing my brother. And I was like, you're not losing your brother. You never had a brother. You always had a sister who was too scared to be herself. And then she kind of calmed down a little bit. Well, one of my nephews told me the same thing, and then I had to explain to them, my nephew who's like just months away from 18. That was the last time I had to come out to somebody. Now I'm already Stephanie. I've already legally changed my name. There is no more coming out. People who meet me from now going forward will just meet the real me. There will no longer be any transitioning effects, if you will, or leftovers from that. But it's not been easy. A lot of people have reached out to me who I didn't expect, people who I wasn't close to in the past, have reached out to me and they've shown their support. And there are people who I was close friends with who, you know, we've kind of grown distant over the years, but now we don't even talk at all. So it's been one of those things that I have... You know, if you really want to know who your true friends are, just tell them you're trans. Even if you're lying, just tell them you are, and you will know who your true friends are, because you will lose every one of them that wasn't.
Okay, all right. Well, that's yeah, sure, that's a good way to gauge friendship and family. Wow, okay. So I'm going to say, as I usually do, wow, Stephanie. First off, thank you for sharing that. Second of all, there's layers. Yeah, there's a lot of layers there.
I said that. On my track, I'm an ogre full of onions.
Everybody heard that. I did not call her an ogre. I am free and clear on that one. So, but I wanna say something about something you talked about the last part of your coming out story. And it's a topic that we're going to talk about in an upcoming episode, about those around us. And you mentioned how your sister and your cousin said they were feeling like they were losing, you know, their brother, their uncle.
Right.
And I've gone through this kind of thing myself. We're not going to get too deep into it. I've gone through this with AJ. I've gone through this with my brother Will. And there actually really is kind of a grieving process for our support network. And it's a legit thing that they can go through and that they have to deal with to be comfortable. And it can be frustrating to us, but at the same time, to keep them in our lives, they have to go through those things. But that's a whole process that and stories that I will talk about a whole lot later down the road, because I have some stories like that where I have people who are close to me, family that went through that, and then I've had family that weren't really close to me that were just like, okay, cool, now, you know. So in major contrast here, my coming out story's not real exciting. It's not really drama filled. I mean, it is, but it isn't, and there's a big chunk of it that we're not going to talk about on here because of a very, very, very bad incident in the past. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of tell you from the 4 year mark, which is 4 years ago about today. And it took me 4 years to tell the entire world. I kind of had, I know I said 4 years, but in my early 20s, this is around 2000, 2001, 2002, kind of had a pretty good idea. And almost, I had kind of started the process, but things happened moving on. So when I started actually to come out, you know, first person that I had to tell, obviously, was AJ. She had to know, you know, she had to know what was going on. And I'm going to kind of just slide in here real quick with my transition story is very much not typical and way longer than we really have to talk here. So I'm going to, this is kind of there's a long version and a short version. There are some of you listening that know the long version. And there are some of you listening that know the short version. This is also going to be that short version. I still don't talk a lot about the long version unless, you know, I really know you. So, yeah, I mean, AJ was the first one to know. And it, when I came out to her, it was a big strain on our relationship. Now things have kind of stabilized a bit and we've kind of figured it out, how we move forward with it. But she was the first. Obviously she's going to be around me almost all the time. Gonna kind of notice stuff. Unlike a lot of transgender individuals, everything that we go through, like HRT and stuff, I kind of took a long road to get to those points simply because I wanted everybody to be comfortable. And that worked out pretty good. You know, that worked out pretty good because the people that are around me the most, they really, really had time to process it. So the next people that I told, was my brother that I adopted, William, and his wife, Shelley. And I know they're listening, you know, love you both. Thank you so much for being there. I can't tell you what it means. From there, I kind of built a little circle. And the circle was just people that I could really trust. And it was still a secret. And the biggest things for me was when they found out was, are they going to out me? Because like you mentioned in your story, no one has the right, if you're gay, lesbian, trans, whatever it is, no one but you has the right to out you.
Yes.
If they do that, they're a dick, you kick them in the crotch, and you walk away. Okay, so maybe that's a little much. But it's still, it's an asshole move. So think about that if you're listening and you think, hey, you know, maybe I should say something. Don't. Don't say anything until you are told it's okay. Yeah. So that my friends, you know, I had kind of these two groups. I had what I would consider my old friends. And then because I had gotten into photography, was starting to build new friends. And most of them were based on photography. You know, they were other photographers. They were other, they were models. They were other creative personalities. And they were all super welcoming, super supportive. I have several funny stories I can tell about each one of these individuals and the moment that they were told, and their reactions, but we're not going to get into the reaction of every single individual. So, you know, my photography friends helped me out so much, with being accepted. Over time, the circle kind of stopped growing. You know, I kind of had figured out who I could tell, who I couldn't tell. This is something that Facebook was wonderful for because I see what my quote-unquote friends are posting, and I can go, okay, maybe not tell this person. Maybe they just need to wander off into the sunset. But it kind of just stopped growing. You know, we weren't telling very many people anymore. I wasn't telling. AJ told some of her coworkers who were super supportive. And of course, she always asked before she did that, you know, hey, is it okay to tell such and such. And I said, yeah, sure, that's fine. simply because, you know, if I walk up there with my makeup on, they're going to kind of notice something's amiss. But it didn't really change until I actually started the HRT. And for me, I started HRT kind of weirdly. I started with blockers, was on blockers for a few months, and then moved into the actual hormones. Has that been good? We'll see. But that was, once I was on the HRT, that was the big catalyst to go, all right, we got to figure this out and figure out how to tell everybody. So, I mean, once I was on them, AJ and I kind of talked about it a little bit about how to tell the rest of those that were important. So we're talking some members of my family. I don't like most of them. They don't like me. Long stories. Not going to get into it. But AJ's family have always been welcoming to me. And we had to figure out how we were going to tell them. And I wanted to just go ahead and say, you know, this is 4 years down the road. I just wanted to be done with it. I wanted to come out. I want to say I'm done. This is who I am. If you're supportive, great. If you're not, take a long walk off a short pier. I don't care anymore. But AJ talked me down. Hey, let's just calm things down. And I kind of saw several things as like chains holding me back. But it wasn't so bad. There are some people I wish I got to tell in person. But they found out, you know, either via Facebook or, you know, not really in person, but in a roundabout way. But it was just, things didn't work out. We weren't going to be able to be in the same room or even be on the same phone call at the same time. So, but before I finally came out to the whole world, I had one major change in obstacle, and that was my job. The reason for that was, at the time, I'm not still sure if this person's still there or not. I don't really care. We had a member of the staff who was very anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ, believed there was a gay agenda, and his rights as a single white male were going to be taken away. And the problem was, he was not quiet about his views. He was extremely vocal. And we also, the clientele of where I worked were people who would not be very welcoming, due to whatever, their conservative beliefs, religious beliefs, whatever it would be. They just were not going to be accepting, and that could be detrimental for a lot of people. That could be detrimental for myself. That could be detrimental for the business. That could be detrimental for the business owner. so, you know, it was what it was. But once I did that, once I left that place, we went through, AJ and I should say, went through and made sure we told everybody in person that we wanted to tell. Make sure, hey, you know. And a lot of them were like, hey, let's talk about this because, yeah, you don't want to see this on Facebook and then think, what the hell is going on? But you wanted to know exactly you know, here's a heads up. Because Robin's going to throw a grenade in the room. Hooray! You know. So, after that, that's when I got on, you know, the Facebook, social media, and said, this is who I am. I'm transgender. This is what I'm going through. This is who I am. Love it or leave it. I don't care. I'm done hiding. And I am. I've been done hiding for 3 years, but it took me longer to get to the point where I can actually say I'm done hiding. So, you know, here's a big deal where my story and Stephanie's stories are different, as if they weren't different enough before. And for me, is once I came out and the people that I have told, I haven't had any negative comments. I mean, I'm guessing most of them are afraid of AJ because, you know, she could break pretty much anybody in half. Stephanie knows. She's met her. But I really didn't have anybody come at me with any sort of conservative, religious, any sort of negative, you know, vibe or anything. They just, everybody has been so accepting. This has caused my paranoia to be a little heightened because I feel like as a trans individual, that shoe needs to drop, and I'm on kind of on edge with every person that I tell, and they say, oh, I'm so happy for you. I'm so, congratulations. I'm so proud of you. It's like, okay, am I going to walk around the corner and the fallout's going to be even worse? Am I going to run into somebody who wants to just punch me in the face? I don't know. But I've had a lot of support. And that's been great. Now, I know there are several people who are not supportive of it. And thankfully, they just haven't been vocal about it. I also know that most of them are still quote-unquote friends with me, you know, like on Facebook or whatever, because they're the ones that also usually post that, you know, meme comment about we can disagree and still be friends crap. I mean, yeah, you can be friends unless you're saying that trans individuals don't matter at all, which, fuck off. We do too. You know, and when they post stuff like that, if they had dropped me from their friends list, kind of makes them look like hypocrites, right? I mean, yeah. So that's been a big deal. I do have one story I want to tell. That for me, it's one of them that sticks out. And it happened to be before I left my job. And one of the things I had been kicking around, the idea of creating my own photography studio and a prop shop. Now, a prop shop is where, we get some people who can build stuff and they make sets for the photography or different little props that the clients and stuff can use and whatever. So there were four of us that had discussed getting into this prop shop thing. And I decided that two of them, they didn't know. So I needed to tell them. Because that could affect whether or not we move forward, we don't move forward, whatever. I was pretty sure how the whole meeting was going to go, but I was still on edge. So I had asked William, my brother, love you, to come with me as backup, as support. And I love William to death. He's just doofy as there is, you know. Nobody is doofier than William, but I still love him to death. That's why I adopted him. And I decided to tell our friends, Joseph and Philip. I started telling these two, Joseph and Philip, they didn't know. William, of course, he's known since, like, day three, day four. We were eating our lunch, you know, sitting at a restaurant. And I started telling them what was going on. And getting ready to make that big reveal. Now, one of the things I love to do is when I start talking to people is see what I call light bulb moments. And that's where, you know, you see the imaginary light bulb go off above someone's head because things suddenly make sense to them. And it's like that aha moment. And I just love that. As I'm going through everything and telling these two, Philip, it just, the light comes on and it, oh my God, yeah, oh my God. Joseph, not so much. He's just very, okay. I think he wanted to hurry up so he could go catch Pokemon or something. You know.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, nerd stuff. Anyway.
The only person I had in my life that said to me, okay, now everything makes sense, was actually one of my ex-girlfriends, but I don't want to tell the story because we actually dated, me and my sister dated the same girl in high school.
Okay.
So there you go.
Well, anyway,
I'm from Nevada. We're a little bit more progressive.
Yeah, but she's very, never mind. I'm not going to get into that. Anyway, so I've worked my way up. I'm going to make the big reveal to these two. And they're both being supportive. They're just, Joseph's not a super emotional individual. And Philip is, kind of. And what was hilarious about this story and what I love about this story was Will starts, I don't really know, picking on me, but, you know, having fun like friends do. You pick on each other just a little bit, good fun ribbing, each other. And he let the cat out of the bag. He used the female pronouns and my female name. And I know it's, I said, don't out somebody. But the first thing that happened was I just turned and I looked at William. And he had kind of turned white because he knew what he had done. And he had this look on his face like, oh, damn it, now I'm going to get yelled at. And I just, I picked on him. I hassled him. I said, you know, way to go, jackass.
Yeah.
Way to go. Thanks for stealing my thunder. And, of course, we all laughed about it. And but it was cool. And it was something that, you know, my friends were just really, really cool. And, you know, I got to see one more light bulb moment from Philip. So, I mean, it was really good. And that was probably one of the best, quote-unquote, coming out stories, or at least the funniest to me. I mean, I've got one about my sister Courtney that's kind of clever and kind of funny, and one about my dad, some comments my dad made about me transitioning and coming out. And they're not negative comments, at least not to me. They're negative to my mother, but they don't get along very well anyway. So, but that's, in a nutshell, basically my kind of coming out story. Like I said, there's a long version and a short version. That doesn't seem like a short version, but it is. If you know me, if you really know me, you've gotten the long version. You know about the dark times. You know about the bad thing. So that was a pretty good way for us to kick off this show, I think. This nice little landmark. But
before we get into the next segment, okay. She told y'all a bald face lie. There is a gay agenda, and is we want Lady Gaga on the $1 bill.
Okay. All right. To quote, I can't believe I get to do this, but I'm going to quote Star Trek V. This is what happens when you miss staff meetings, I guess. Oh, dear God. Why does it always come back to Star Trek?
You weren't invited to the meeting?
I was not. I did not get the memo.
Oh, well, I do apologize.
The whole rights thing, by the way, is a topic that I get out of pocket on, but I get out of pocket on it in a very fire and brimstone way, which, get ready, everyone, because that episode is coming. I have some choice words to say about some kind of current events, but we're going to save that for another episode. So I want to talk about something now that kind of goes hand in hand with coming out stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I've kind of dubbed unintentional activism. Now, it's a subject that I hear from a lot of people, including you, Stephanie. You've mentioned this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like after someone comes out and they realize...
Our existence is political, whether we agree with it or not.
Exactly. After someone comes out, whether it's trans, it's lesbian, gay, Pastafarian, whatever.
Robosexual.
Let's not even get into that weird-ass shit. That was very close-minded of me anyway. When they go through this coming-out process, they realize how hard the process is just to feel safe and be themselves. They think about being an activist. I hear that a lot from trans individuals I get to talk to. And even, like I said, Stephanie has said this. She said, you know, I think I'm going to become an activist. I'm going to do something to bring attention to us in a positive way. And here's the thing. By coming out as a member of the LGBTQ community, trans, gay, lesbian, bi, whatever, wherever on that spectrum you identify, you kind of already are an activist.
Yeah.
It's unintended. Nobody thinks about that. Nobody who is, especially transgender individual, comes out and goes, I'm trans, I'm going to make sure trans people have a better life. And that's why I'm coming out.
No, it's just you want to be treated like a person, like you were before, and you start to see all of the holes in the way the system works.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
We're not going to get into the specifics, but I'm running into a lot of that today.
Absolutely, you know. I just don't think most people, especially trans individuals, realize that they are an activist just by coming out. And because of that, all of us, in a way, all of transgender individuals, every time one of us comes out, we kind of are all trailblazers. And we're trailblazers because as we come out, we're showing others that are still in hiding, still trying to figure things out, that it's okay to be yourself. And by standing up for ourselves, that definitely shows some form of activism. Now, I know that activism itself can be more than that. But at its core, it's all about fighting for your right to be yourself. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, well, just to be treated like a person, really.
Exactly.
To be treated like the same, to have the same rights everyone else has. And I know for me, like, I started really, like, one of the things that facilitated my coming out quicker was I started interacting with other trans women, and when I saw them living their lives, I knew I couldn't wait to get there myself. But at the same time, as I started meeting trans women and they started telling their stories, I started feeling more and more angry that there are still so many of us that have to go through that.
There are, and there are so many of us that have to, that just have to go through the hiding and searching for acceptance. And once we come out, you know, I'm not going to say all the time, and it's not everywhere, but there are places around the country, around the globe, where we're treated as not even second-class citizens. Where we're just treated as something that is here, but you're supposed to hate it. And I think when we all come out and we stand up for ourselves, that just shows the entire world, you know what? This is who we are. We deserve to be treated as human beings, because it does not matter your political views, your religious views, your financial standings, your relationship status. It doesn't matter. All these things don't matter. We are all human beings, and we should treat each other better. You know, yeah, sometimes this trans thing's kind of hard to wrap your brain around. Imagine being one of us. Think it's easy for us to wrap our brains around this? No, it isn't. But when we become, you know, we come out and we tell the world, I think everybody who I know from a standpoint of everyone who tells me that I think I'm going to become an activist. Now, this is not like an overnight thing. They don't go, I've come out, I'm going to be an activist. This is usually, they've come out, a couple months later, they're like, oh, you know what, maybe I ought to think about being an activist of some form.
Yeah, it can be like the first time you get kicked out of a gas station, you know, or you go to the bank and they're like, I can't cash your check. I don't know who you are.
Yeah, you know, and it's, but we're all activists. And I think we all should embrace that, because change is not made by us sitting at home feeling bad that the world doesn't care for us and going, you know, it would be so nice if this didn't exist or this didn't happen. It'll stop happening when you make it stop happening. And that's just voicing opinions. You know, you don't have to get out there and march and write letters, but let the world know you are you.
It's just like we said a couple weeks ago, when just being more visible, going out in public as yourself, people will start to see that we are just people. The more they see us, the more they'll accept us. You know, it's like, I gotta be careful how I phrase this, but like, you know, 50 years ago, if you were African American in this country, you didn't have rights.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, you were just by being alive, you were, you know, you're making a political statement just by not being dead. You know.
Absolutely.
And,
that's true.
And as soon as they started fighting for rights, the legal system put up all kinds of hurdles to make it more and more difficult. Now, we haven't eradicated racism in this country. There's very clear evidence of that. But we have codified legal protections for people from their being discriminated against based on their color or ethnicity. But we're still trying to figure out, from a legal standpoint, how do you define trans people under the law, and where do we fall? So it's not just fighting for rights, it's just fighting for recognition. Just to be, you know, how do they put us down on a census?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it is something that we just have to keep fighting, and we just have to let people know that we exist. Now, when I say we have to keep fighting, I don't mean beat up every redneck you find.
No, and we're not talking like,
We're
chain yourself
talking, yeah,
to,
don't
the
chain
post
yourself to a
office.
tree or
Whatever,
anything, you
yeah, I mean,
know.
be as active as you want to be. Protest, right? Exercise your rights as much as you want.
And protesting and letting people know your support. And this goes even to our allies. It can be something as simple as a decal on your car,
Yes.
little window
Or
decals.
those little Trans Ally buttons that they
Or
hand
the
out.
absolutely. Absolutely. And that's all it takes. But I think we are all activists, and I think it's something that definitely needed to be discussed was if you are LGBTQ in any form, just letting people know that you are part of that group kind of makes you an activist. You don't really have to think about, do I want to be an activist? Sweetie,
And
you are.
that was sort of like when we set out to do this podcast, that was sort of what we wanted. It's not like we're setting out to change the world. We're just trying to put two more trans people out there and show you that this is who we are and share our experiences from our perspectives.
Well,
If
I
we get to
mean,
change the world, that'd be great, but we need y'all to help us with that.
yeah, I mean, yes, that's a wonderful goal. And yes, I am fully supportive of that. I just also want people to understand I actually rule the entire planet.
Oh,
And
well,
they
my
should
cat
all.
will disagree with you on
He's
that.
a cat. He
That.
can't make laws. No, I had nothing to do with our current state. Because nobody listens to me because they don't realize I'm in charge. So, I
Are we
know.
ready? Are we ready to talk top five,
Let's
or do you have some more?
I think that's pretty good. I think I rambled on that one a little more.
Yeah, I think you did all right.
But yeah, I just the takeaway point is if you're in our community, whether you're LGBTQ if you're LGBTQ, whether it's trans, gay, whatever it is, you don't have to think about the activism. You are.
Yeah, and I hate to be the one to say this. Even if your friends are all supportive, and even if your work is all supportive, you are going to face discrimination at some point. There's going to be somebody, whether it's a bank or the DMV or somebody, that's going to say, "You know what? I don't think I agree with what you're doing," so they're going to make it difficult for you.
Absolutely. And it's just something being, especially for trans individuals, it's just something we have to deal with because of the times we live in. So, those are the takeaway points for that. Let's move into the fun thing that everybody actually
The real
tunes
reason you're
in.
here.
Yeah, so we are going to talk about this week's weekly top five is songs that mean something different to us now that we're out as trans. Now, I wanted to clarify this a little bit. These don't have to just be positive. I have a couple songs on my list that piss me off. I just want everybody to know there are positive ones on my list, but that doesn't mean that that's all that's on my list. So, Stephanie,
Whoops.
did you screw us up?
No, we're still going. No,
Okay,
we're not.
don't.
God damn it. I hit the wrong button. I lost it. We're still going. Woo!
I thought by putting us in the same room, we would be past these technical issues.
I put my notes on the wrong thing. It's all right. I know what we're talking about now.
Google Drive, girl. Google
I'm
Drive.
sorry.
All right. So, Stephanie, number five for you. What you got?
So this song is it's actually it isn't so much that after I started transitioning, the song itself changed, but the mood changed. So this song is by Lisa Loeb, and it's called Firecracker. This was always my, whenever I felt hopeless, this was the song I would put on, and I would put it on repeat and just listen to it over and over and over. And no, this isn't a song to make me feel better. This was a song to just ride it out. Ride the depression. Feel hopeless. And then I would slowly shift to other songs, you know, whatever. Now, when I listen to it, it's more of a hopeful song. I listen to it and it's like, yes, things will get better. I look back at everything I've overcome and I think, you know, how many different points could I have given up? And I didn't. And so now when I hear this song, no, the lyrics are kind of cryptic and it's not a... Lisa Loeb is a great singer. She's not a great songwriter. No offense.
I agree with that.
But to me, the lyrics don't even make any sense. I think I get what she's trying to say, but it's not like, it's not, that's not what it is. It's just the mood, the tone of the song. When I'm really down, this is the kind of song I want to listen to. But now I'll listen to it, not even when I'm feeling down, I'll listen to it more of a, to pick me up, not just to ride it out. Subtle, but that's the biggest way it's changed.
Well, and that's an important way it's changed. So, yeah, okay, all right. So my number five kind of is a song because, as we said in previous podcast, my number one genre is 80s. 80s anything. And one song in particular, since I'm out as trans, has become a song that just kind of pisses me off. It's getting to the point now that even if it comes on when I'm listening to my SiriusXM, I have to mute it or change channels or something. And it's only because of a small section of it. I'm not going to get into what the actual lyrics were that are said, but it's Funky Cold Medina by Tone Loc. And it just pisses me off now to no end. Before, I'd been like, it's kind of a cool beat. It's very 80s. But he does make some comments and says some things in there that are very much anti-trans. And so now it just kind of pisses me off. And it didn't used to. So, yeah, that's my number five. What you got for number four?
So this one actually changed recently, but it's always been kind of on my mind. It's by Fiona Apple. The song is called Criminal. When I was younger, it was more of a, you know, self-reflective kind of, you know, oops, I'm a bad person, and this song reminds me of how bad I am. Who I've hurt wasn't really relevant. It was just I hurt myself the most. But after getting my heart broken by a guy that I didn't think I would actually have feelings for, the song changed because now I feel like it's more personal because now I feel guilty that I shouldn't, but I feel guilty that I ended this relationship with someone who was a great guy. We were friends and now we're nothing. We have no relationship. And I could have handled that better, but at the same time, he couldn't handle being friends with the trans girl who had a crush on him. And so that's that. So now when I listen to that song, it speaks more to me on, you know, I was the bad girl in that song who hurt a guy I shouldn't hurt, even though I know that's probably not the actual truth.
Okay. All right. That's, yeah. All right. I can see that. So my number four is a song that I used to find hilarious. I thought it was funny.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty funny. But the reasons I thought it was funny were, one, apparently I didn't know what good comedy music was, because as you all remember, that's one of my genres. Two, I didn't realize how just kind of effed up the song is. So now to me, it's just not funny anymore. I mean, it is very insensitive to me now. And it is a song. Are you ready for this title? It's called Dancing with a Man by Rodney Carrington.
Okay.
I thought it was funny years and years ago. And it was inappropriate. You know, it was, I don't really know, like, commentary or anything on it, but I thought it was funny. Rodney Carrington's supposed to be a comedy musician. It's country music, but it's still primarily classified as comedy. But now, when I hear it, it doesn't make me as angry as my number five, but I feel it's insensitive. I feel it's a very redneck, close-minded song. And so I can't even listen to it. So that's my number four. And yeah, just not funny anymore. What's your number three?
Well, before I answer this, I want to touch on your number five. I do still listen to Tone Loc, but I'm big into hip-hop, and I already have come to terms with the fact that a lot of the gangster rappers are misogynist pigs, and I've accepted it. As you heard that song I showed you the other day.
Yes.
My number three, okay, I'm not going to say who it is. Just the band is garbage, and one of my favorite songs by them is called Queer, and I used to listen to this song all the time. It's got double met. It's got layers, but you know.
By the way, I'm going to interject here. The band is named Garbage. They're not garbage.
And they are absolutely not garbage. They're beautiful. They're fantastic music. One of my favorite bands of all time. But actually, the song that has changed this meaning for me, because Queer has evolved as I've evolved, but it's always been had layers. It's the song called Stupid Girl. Now, when I was still pretending to be a guy, this song was always, whenever a girl would break my heart or do something stupid, I would play this song and I would hate her. Because it was a very good, you know, it's not a good hate song, but it worked better than Alanis Morissette. Her songs aren't as good as hating as so much they are just like, come on, get over it. She cries too much.
I agree.
But now when I listen to Stupid Girl, I feel like it's singing about me. It's all the stupid shit I do. So it's more of, and it's more playful, you know, I kind of, you know, I just sort of, you know, steer into the skid, as they say, you know, and I can't really hide from my eccentricities anymore.
No, and you shouldn't hide.
But I still like the band. I love the music, and I love it. It's a catchy song. Yeah. It's one of their like more upbeat, catchier kind of songs, which I really like. I also like their more, you know, like serious kinds. I just love every song that they as a band has done. I just love it.
It's also one of their few radio hits.
Yeah, well, you know, they've had,
They didn't have a whole lot of them, but yeah, they've had a couple, so.
They had more success on MTV, I think, than they did on the radio. Yeah. They got some pretty wild music videos.
Until MTV quit playing music videos. Now they only play ridiculousness. Which I like the show, by the way, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Oh, is that Teenage and Pregnant?
No, the Ridiculousness is an actual show.
Oh, I thought you were talking about.
Where they take
funny videos. I thought
you were
talking
videos.
About, like, 16.
No, that.
Whatever
that,
it is.
That shit's just
Teen Mom or whatever. I'm like.
Oh, let's put a train wreck in front of a camera and let's show the entire world. Hey, that's great. No,
it's like when the G4 used to do Cheaters.
I know. Good Lord.
I'm surprised the cameraman survived.
Yeah. So, the last three on my top five here on my list, they're all the same artist.
Okay.
And now we're getting into my positive on these. I listen to them when I exercise. Both these albums that these songs come from are definitely in my exercise playlist. They're very motivational to me. They do mean, especially my number one, they do mean something different now. And there's usually because there's little bitty things with said within those songs that I really gravitate to. And my number three is the song Get Up by Shinedown off the Attention Attention album. It's a positive song about understanding that you feel lost. And I mean, even even its opening is I know you're clinging to the light of day just to tell you everything will be okay. You know, and we do that as trans individuals. We hope tomorrow is better. Tomorrow is the day. There's also a spot in there, you know, and the whole premise is keep moving. Don't stop. Keep moving forward. And there's a little spot in there where they say, maybe part of the problem is I don't talk about this. And I think that's something trans individuals can relate to. Because for so long, we don't talk about it. We don't say anything. We just, and it's okay. So that's my number three, Get Up by Shinedown.
Okay.
You're up.
This one's gonna be hard. So my number two is Cats in the Cradle by Ugly Kid Joe. This was a song that I can't listen to anymore because I don't want to fall into the trap of... One of the things that I'm really close with my dad, and one of the things that kept me from transitioning was knowing my dad was going to be losing his only son. And that was hard for me because this song is a very distant dad-son relationship kind of thing. And now I listen to it and I'm like, you know, my dad and I we didn't spend a lot of time together. We weren't we were close in that, you know, I mean, I won't get into it, but he was always there, but we didn't talk. We didn't get to know each other. I mean, we never really talked about anything meaningful. We talk about basketball and, you know, sometimes we talk about the bullshit that comes out of Bill O'Reilly's mouth, which thank God he's not on the air anymore. But we never really had any like real meaningful conversations, but as I started transitioning, I noticed that our conversations were fewer and farther between, and they're more like, hey, how you doing? Here's the phone. Here's your mom. And then I'm talking to my mom for another 40 minutes. And that's about the extent of it. So this song now, it's more of I've put him, not my dad, but the other guy, in the past. He doesn't exist anymore. So now when I listen to this song, it's partially... not so much longing for something that's gone because I don't want to do that, but it's my way of mourning the person that I was, but in a good way. But I still can't listen to it as much as I used to. I used to listen to this song anytime I was missing my dad or feeling distant from my family. Now it's like I don't want to feel that anymore. But I do occasionally. I will just call him up out of the blue because he's still my dad, and then he'll say, if he answers the phone at all, which is, he's getting to where he don't as much as he used to. If he answers the phone at all, it's usually pretty brief. And, you know, he's still spouting those really disgusting political views, you know. Most recently it was, you know, the election, but even, like, when I first started coming out, it was all the NBA getting too political because they were Black Lives Matter, and then he couldn't watch the basketball games anymore, and I'm like, okay, let's talk about something else.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. I understand songs like that. I haven't run across a song like that. I mean, other than the one that pisses me off, but there's not one that just I can't listen to and go, okay, yeah, that's kind of heartbreaking in a way when you really start to dissect it. So my number two, we already know who the artist is. It's Shinedown. Spoiler alert. My number two is, again, off the Attention album. It's Brilliant. That's the name of the song. The song is Brilliant, but the name of the song is Brilliant. And
not as good as Garbage, but
nice shot there. Anyway, good Lord. The whole premise of it is today is my day. And not in a cocky, egotistical way, but in a hopeful day. I mean, the chorus is, it's my day to be brilliant. And it really is, and that means something a lot more now, because I can sit there and I can go, you know what? Yeah, it is. It is my day to be me and to be as bright and shiny as a fireball as I want to be. And it's just so uplifting to me. It's also, again, like I said, I listen to this when I work out. It's one of those exercise songs that I always find myself when I'm listening to it, I've really picked up my pace. So it's definitely one that I can listen to, and it pulls me out of any sort of muck or funk that I'm in from depression. But yeah, that's my number two. So what's your number one, Stephanie?
So before I tell you my number one, I have to tell a quick story.
Oh, Lord.
It was 2016, and it was right around November when the election of Mr. No Longer in Office won. And I remember listening to the radio, and one of my favorite songs to listen to, it was always a hopeful song, was Electric Youth by Debbie Gibson. And this was one of those songs that I always... There's a lyric in the song, and I'm not going to quote it. I'm just going to say it's basically talking about there's, you know, we are us. And it was made in the 80s. So she was a teenager in the 80s, and she's talking about our generation. She's saying, we are the hope for the future. We are the ones that are going to make the world better. And that song used to be hopeful for me back when I was a kid, because it was like, oh, yeah, this is great. This is hopeful. And then when the guy got in office, I told my sister, I said, that song is a fucking lie. Here we are in the future, and we're fucking up the country. We're making it worse.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't believe it. But my song, this song, my number one that just changed it, because that was unrelated to this, but this was the song that changed because of my transitioning, was Invincible by Pat Benatar. This song was similar. It always gave me hope that we're invincible, us, our generation, the millennials, if you will. We are the ones that can't be broken. We were the ones who were coming of age during 9/11. We were the ones who were, when we were, what, first, second grade, watching all of our uncles go off to the first Persian Gulf War, and then they came back victorious within days, and we were like, go USA. And then now we're just like, what the fuck happened? Mm-hmm. Not just what happened to our country, but what happened to us, to our peers, our generation, that we are... And when I started becoming trans, I started to realize that everybody I knew my age from then till now, they were all on board with being gay. If you're gay, great, go be gay. But trans, it's different. Yeah. And so now when I listen to this song, it's not hopeful, like, you know, we are the generation that's going to overcome everything. It's, I'm fighting for my fucking survival now. And when I play this song, I just feel like that's all it takes everything I have to just keep fighting. And it feels hopeless, even though it isn't. It feels like the fight, it feels like we're losing the fight. And we don't feel as invincible as I used to feel like we used to be. I feel like we are being broken down. But I still listen to the song. It's just, it doesn't feel... It's not like an anthem anymore. Now it's more like a swan song, you know?
Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. Love Pat Benatar. It's a great song. But you're right. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be the same as it used to be. So my number one... Anybody want to guess who the band is?
Oh, the Presidents of the United States of America.
I don't listen to that trash.
Okay, we're done.
No,
they are trash. There's no...
They are trash. Come on. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy.
Again, Shinedown. Now, this song, I never realized until I started listening to the words what it was saying and what it meant. And this has been a song that has really taken on a whole new meaning for me. And in part It's because of this podcast. Okay? Getting up every week, doing this weekly, connecting with everyone who's listening. This song has really changed for me as trans and for this podcast. And it's off the Threat to Survival album by Shinedown. And it's called Dangerous. And why is it? The chorus of it is, I will never be voiceless. This is my weapon of choice. Something along those lines. Anyway, I'm paraphrasing. But I'd rather be dangerous. And I would rather, by saying what's in my brain, no matter how inappropriate it is sometimes, and make Stephanie blush like a sailor, I would rather that and what's in my heart be out there. If it's dangerous, fine. But I will not be voiceless anymore. Refuse. Not that most people could ignore me anyway. I know you're rolling your eyes, William. But that song now means so much more. Because I won't be voiceless. I refuse to just sit quiet. I refuse. You know, this is my life. I deserve to be happy just like everybody else deserves it. Just like every trans individual listening, just like you, Stephanie, deserve it. Yeah. Just like even AJ deserves to be happy. Everybody deserves to be happy. And I will not be quiet anymore about sharing who I am and that I'm happy. So this song definitely changed. And yeah, I won't be part of the silent damnation anymore. So that's my number one. It's a great song. You should all listen to it. You should buy Shinedown's album. Shinedown, I love you.
And one thing I just want to, I've noticed, like, recently, I go back and I listen to a lot of the LGBT bands who, you know, back in, like, the 70s, 80s, who either they were in the closet or they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a theme in a lot of those songs. There is a running message in a lot of those songs of that we're fighting for something that we're not winning. And you hear, you know, like, even, like, the popular anthems, like, I Will Survive, you know, or just, even though it's not really, like, an anthem, it's, like even, like, the big popular, like, songs that we gravitate to, like, for example, B-52's Love Shack, you know, it was all about just having a place where people can get together, you know, and, but they, if you listen to it, they had to go way out in the woods where no one else was around, hiding in the trees, you know, it was like, we just want to be ourselves. And there's even the uplifting LGBT songs are depressing because it is just us fighting for our right to be.
Yeah. Just
our right to exist. And so, you know, like I could have talked about this whole list could have just been the B-52s, but that, even that, it's like when you hear an uplifting or a happy song, there's still a dark undertone to it for us because there's always that, yeah, I can be happy as long as I close the curtains and go out into the woods. No one can see what I'm doing or who I'm with.
Right, as long as you're still hiding. So, wait, you're saying that the B-52s have some dark messages? What's the dark message in Rock Lobster? Don't ruin the song for me.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Okay. All right, I'm not going to ask. Don't ruin Rock Lobster for me. It is the greatest, worst song ever. So bad it's good. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not.
I love Rock Lobster.
But I love Rock Lobster. That's one of my favorites.
My favorite song by them is Channel Z, but that's another one that you have to really get into it to get it.
Well, that is going to do it for us. Yes. I want to, as always, thank you everyone who's listening. Thank you for those who come back every week to hear these two crazy individuals discuss things that, you know.
Be sure to like, subscribe, thumbs up, leave us a comment. All of the engagements help.
Absolutely. Leave comments. Tell us if we're doing a good job. Don't tell us if we're doing a bad job, because my ego is fragile.
And help us grow by sharing us on Facebook.
Absolutely. Share, like, join us on Facebook at TransPostPod. Next week, we're going to get into a little bit of some hot-tempered stuff.
Ooh.
That's right. Your girl's going to get a little angry. Going to get a little angry. We're going to talk about some equality things that need to be said. So, yes, I am probably going to get spun off into a dimension of pissed off very few people have ever seen. But, just like an actual train wreck, you want to watch this because you can't look away, because it's going to be awesome.
Yes, and I, as someone who is facing the iron fist of the United States bureaucratic bullshit right now, I'm going to have some stuff to say as well, I am sure.
Oh, absolutely. So hopefully you will all tune in next week to join us for that. And hopefully this episode was, you know, like I said at the beginning, it may not have been as good as Empire Strikes Back, but hopefully we did better than Star Trek V. I'm hoping. So,
as long as she's not taking digs at my Phantom Menace, I'm okay.
That's next episode, everybody. Thank you all, everyone. And we'll see you all next week.
Yes.